I mean, sometimes, Kevin, you just give it up to the pitcher.
And you just move on. You don't try to read anything into a loss. Sometimes the guy in the mound is just better than you are. 3-0, the Boston Red Sox beating the Toronto Blue Jays tonight at Fenway Park. The numbers, as always, 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. The Jays starting rotation very much in focus. The rest of this month, and indeed through September as well, we've talked a lot about it on Blair and Barker. We talked about it in this show after last night's game as well, and wrapped our heads around what may or may not happen with Yariel Rodriguez. Tomorrow we get to see Bowden Francis. And Kevin, will start. Again, I'll ask the callers at 416-870-0590, *591-888-666-0590. I'll ask you, how comfortable are you? Or how comfortable would you be with both Bowden Francis and Yariel Rodriguez in the rotation? Kevin, and we expect Chris Bassitt very much to be a part of the rotation next year, of course, barring a trade. Not much going on for the Jays tonight. Brian Bayo was awfully good. Chris Bassitt, though, from the third base side of the rubber, explain that to me.
Well, yeah, look, I think you try and make your lanes obvious, and I think that's what he was trying to do. The Red Sox threw out five left-handed hitters. He obviously wants to establish a way that's arm side for him to those lefties, and I just think that third base side of the rubber made it a little easier from not standing on the first base side of the rubber. Now, first base side of the rubber, you'd have that sort of crossfire action, right? You'd have the tunneling to where he'd have to really bore it and sort of force the lane across to get it over there to where he wanted to get it, just easier. You know, you set it, you land in a good spot, you make sure you're direct and have a good finish, and that will sort of set your lane and the ball will end up where you want it to go. And I think Kirky did a good job, too, of, you know, making sure when they missed, they were missing, right? Set up a little bit off the blacks. You know, you could see how far he was setting up in. You know, you're setting that. You're using that to, say, throw a ball up to get a swing and miss. It's like one pitch is feeding off the other. His velocity was really good. I just mentioned the Kirk having the bigger targets and making sure he was setting up good. So, you know, when your sinker's good, your cutter's good, I think that sort of sets up the sweeper and the curve, and then he can throw in the plethora of all that other stuff he wants to throw. So, yeah, I mean, that's good. I think this offensive side, we said this on our show, was, you know, it's one thing to do that stuff against the Angels. It's another thing to do that against a playoff team, right, who's mm-hmm. going to pitch to your weaknesses, add and subtract, right? They can locate. They're not going to throw you sliders or hanging changeups right down the middle. You're going to have to work it. You're going to have to earn it. And, you know, I think the last couple of nights we're starting to see just exactly how hard that will be for this lineup. So, yeah, I mean, you asked the question about, are you comfortable with them two dudes to back in? I'm comfortable if they bring in two thumpers. I don't care who pitches. Bing, bang, boom.
416-870-0590, *591-888-666-0590. Why am I not surprised you wouldn't go back to the two thumpers? If you want to know what I'm talking about, go listen to the Blair and Barker podcast and hear the back and forth between Barker and David Sampson on our show. Mr. Barker's shopping list for the Blue Jays about...
Well, it's simple.
About 10 deep.
I was 3 deep. A closer and 2 thumpers. And David basically said he's blowing the whole entire thing up. He's trading Bo and Vladdy when the day the season's over. So...
No, I think what David was basically saying is that you were nuts to think that you were going to be able to get all those. I mean, just paraphrasing, he was being polite. The only person he would ever come out and call nuts is me. He was being polite with you. But
makes for good radio, for sure.
Yeah, it does. Indeed, it does. When you're facing a guy like Brian Bayo, and you can tell early on in the game, Kevin, that you know, he's got his A stuff, and just, as a young hitter, like, what goes through your mind there?
Yeah, I think you got to pick a side. Right? I mean, it's you give him the ball away, you give the ball in. Like, you can't cover the entire thing. You know, he had a good pace, right? That'd tell you he was locked in and not overthinking it. He wasn't overthrowing. I think the last couple of times that we've seen him up close and personal, right, he'll get in a bind, he'll overthrow, his mechanics are a little out of whack, balls all over the place, and, you know, occasionally he'd hang a slider and he'd fall behind the counts, and he just didn't look like, you know, the Bayo I think they're used to seeing. The balance attack, right, it was the 36 sliders, the 34 sinkers, the 20 changeups, and sprinkling the four-seamer, right? So that makes him unpredictable. And then you got the sharpness of the slider, right? The late movements of that thing added on to the high-octane velocity. And then once you get him locating glove side, that's the way to a righty into a lefty. I think that's what you got to do. I think you got to make that adjustment early, and then when you get it, you can't miss it. And, again, I get back to that. It's just, you know, when some dudes are trying to find their way and you got a guy on the mound who's feeling a little frisky and can locate, you know, sometimes that's a little hard on some younger guys. So it is what it is. I'm with you. You turn the page, and, you know, it's a learning experience. Sometimes you got to learn the hard way, and I'm sure they'll take a little something away from this, and maybe the next time they face him, they'll have a better game plan.
Andrew in Toronto, you're on Blue Jays Talk.
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, more or less.
I just want to say that you guys asked what I think about Baron Francis and Yaro Rodriguez moving forward. I mean, I like them. I've seen nice spurts of them doing well, but, like, I don't know if I'm necessarily comfortable with them being in my rotation going forward next year. They might be. They might not. Like, there's not enough for all of a sudden Atkins to just bank on these guys. Okay, here we go. We're set for our rotation. Same thing goes with a bunch of players on the Jays who are playing well now. They're showing me good spurts, but it's not enough for me to just be comfortable with this, like, let's run it back, like Atkins type of thing. Like, I need a lot more. I need to see a lot more of Bannon Francis doing well consistently for me to really believe in it.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Andrew. And Kevin, you know, Andrew makes a good point. Buck Martinez talked about this yesterday. And Buck Martinez talked about this before we saw what we saw from Yariel Rodriguez. I understand it was the Angels. I understand it was two starts against the Angels and a start against the Cubs. I get that. But what I will say about this is I am more comfortable at this point in time thinking of Bowden Francis as being predictable compared to Yariel Rodriguez. I guess what I'm trying to say is I feel that he's more predictable than Rodriguez. Now, this will be interesting. He'll be facing the Red Sox. It's going to get tough. He's facing some playoff teams now. Let's mm-hmm. face it. He's facing some playoff teams. But I think I know what Bowden Francis is. I don't know what Yariel Rodriguez is right now. No, Yariel Rodriguez, that could be because he's much better than I think he's going to be. But I think I have a little more comfort level with Bowden Francis.
Yeah, I think they have to be. I think they have to be good. With what they have to spend money on going into the offseason, less barring that, you know, they flip this thing around and you can't believe what they say, that they're going to run it back and they change their mind and they're going to do something else. You know, you still need bats, and I would think that's probably where they're going to spend their money. You got to remember, too, they did give Yariel Rodriguez, I'm assuming, a deal to start, and this is a pretty small sample size. So,
yep, that is
you
true.
Know, I would
not
just
being paid
think,
like a reliever.
No, I would think with what they do have, the options for the back end of the pen, it's going to be three or four of them guys fighting for two spots, right? So, you know, again, I just think if you sort of simplify it for Yariel, you know, eliminate a couple of his pitches, have him master fastball command because he's simplified a mechanic thing that he can repeat and actually feel when it's gone bad, then I think he'll be fine. You'll see consistent velocity out of that. And then with Bowden Francis, I mean, really, what do you expect from a number five guy, right? I mean, do you expect what he's been giving you? Probably not. Just give you a decent chance to turn it over to the bullpen and hopefully win most of the games that he starts. You know, I think that's all you can wish for. So, yeah, I'm still in the camp. You got to go out and get you some bats and
You know, when he's pitching, maybe they score more runs, helps that back end of the rotation out a little bit to where always they don't have to hold the other team from, you know, two or fewer runs, which is almost impossible to do all the time.
Yeah. I don't think there's any doubt about that. When you talk about I hesitate to use the phrase taking pitches away from Yariel Rodriguez, but when you talk about maybe asking him to refine his arsenal a bit or limit it a bit, Kevin, is that something you have to do in the off season? Is it something you can do in the next, I don't know, two or three starts? How would you go about doing that?
Yeah, I think he's 27. I think there's some urgency from the organization and from the pitching coach to see what he is. I think they got to know going into the offseason whether they think he can start or not. Like, I really do feel that's where this organization is. And when I've asked the question, that's what I've been told. So, yeah, I think you got to have tough conversations with him. I would think the first thing you got to figure out, Jeff, is why he's not throwing hard consistently. Yeah. Whatever your velocity is, sit at it. It's the old Yusei Kikuchi thing, right? Is whenever I saw him, I would always ask you, where's his velocity at, right? We saw that high octane velocity with Seattle, and we rarely saw it with the Blue Jays early on. And then they made that mechanical change to where it was not any of that start and stop thing, and, you know, the release point. It was impossible to get to consistently. And then they changed that. It was fluid. He could get to it. He could feel it when it wasn't there. He could make a quick adjustment, get back to it. And I think sort of that's what they have to do to Yariel. But, yeah, he's 27. Put a little pressure on him to get it done. Some of the secondary pitches, I don't really think he's a feel guy. I think he's a grip it and rip it dude. Have him go out there and be that way. If he can feel it, throw it. And I hope that's at least the people that I've talked to. I think that's what they're going to try and do.
Tyler O'Neill's two-run home run put the capper in this tonight. 3-0, the Red Sox beating the Blue Jays at Fenway Park. Ian in Ridgeville, you're on Blue Jays Talk.
Hey, I was just wondering what you guys thought of a Cody Bellinger acquisition in the offseason, and as a result of that, moving George Springer to the DH. And then I also wanted to just chip in on the Ariel Rodriguez and Bowden Francis thing. I think Rodriguez is a good long reliever role, kind of like Yarbrough's been for the Jays this year since they got him. And Francis, I think, would be a good number five starter. So I'll hang up and listen to you guys. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Kevin on this. I think he's making about $10 million next year now. I don't think that money alone dictates what role you're playing. I'm with Kevin. I think they expect him to be a starter. I don't know what necessarily would be accomplished by putting him in as a reliever.
Yeah.
Seems to me, and you got Ryan Yarbrough to kind of be that guy.
And, Jeff, the issues that he has punching people out, I just don't know what purpose he would serve in the pen, right?
Yeah, like how would that translate in the bullpen?
When he gets to two strikes, now what? Like, that's what they have to figure out. And the Bellinger thing, I'm just not sure 13 homers and 55 RBIs, what you'd have to pay him makes sense. There's better options.
He's got a $27.5 million player option with a $2.5 million buyout. He turns 30 in July. I'm thinking he could opt out, maybe try to get a four-year deal for $90 to $100 million someplace, or he could just hang on to his $27.5 million from the Cubs and try to reset himself. I'm with Kevin. He can't be my primary acquisition. You know, I made this point earlier this month, and I will stick with it. And it was kind of an issue I had in some ways with what Chris Bassett said on the Chris Rose rotation. And I understand Bassett walked it back and clarified it a bit, but you know. The second option for the Blue Jays after Shohei Ohtani was Cody Bellinger. Cody Bellinger doesn't have this team in a playoff spot right now.
No.
He really doesn't. And I'm kind of with Kevin. I need to do better than that.
I need to do better than Cody Bellinger, especially because he really doesn't address the pressing need I have at a position.
No, I'm with you. Just the 419 slug. You're looking for a couple of dudes to make your lineup longer. Like you want a threat. You want a threat of run producing. You want a threat of the 3-run homer, which they have not had since 2015. So, and when Teoscar was here, like that's the last time. So, you know, again, I like that he's left-handed. That might be the only thing I like. Now, obviously, he plays good defense, and you know the things that Springer you're going to have to do with him next year. You know, look, you can't take care of it all. And this is what I've been saying: get the best two bats you can possibly get, and then once they get here, worry about where they play.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you completely in that. And you know, not reading too much into the lefty hitters they have right now, but I'm at this point in time. I just want them to be run producers. I don't care if they bat right, left, or middle. I just want them to be run producers. If, you know, if balance is that big an issue, I can figure it out by having a couple, you know, maybe by having Barger in the lineup along with Horowitz or, you know, whoever.
Lo Perfetto,
exactly. I can work the balance out. I mean, ultimately what I want to do with this team is I want to have Lo Perfetto as my fourth outfielder. A guy that I can sometimes DH him against a righty, but he's got to be my fourth outfielder, and you know that's kind of where I am. I'm like that with Barber.
Yeah, I'm just not sure.
Gotta be longer.
You got to think about it. You're trying to solidify the top five spots in your lineup.
Yep.
A 13 home run, 55 RBI guy hitting fifth for you next year, like. Yep. Yeah, probably not. So, you know, I just think this year there's better options to sort of try and make that five first spots as strong as possible. And I'm not saying he's not a good player. I just don't think for me next year with where the organization's at and what they're trying to do to start the season, he's probably not the answer. Because he's not a run producer. I think that's what you got to tell yourself, too. I mean, he's a 745 OPS guy. I mean, you're looking for mid-800s, close to 900 guys. That's, you know, when you're looking for the 300 total base guys. Like, that's sort of the kind of thing you're looking for. So, yeah, I mean, you got to shoot for the moon at least early. And then after, if you can't get to the moon, then you maybe have to double back and think about that. But right now, he's not on my radar.
416-870-0590. 888-666-0590. *590. It is Blue Jays Talk with Blair and Barker. Boston Red Sox have beaten the Blue Jays 3-0. We'll take a break, hear from the skipper, and go back to the phone lines. It's Blue Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Man, I mean, settled in after the first, and really good mix. He was getting... breaking ball was really good to righties, and I think that, you know, the cutter kind of up and out to lefties was a really good pitch for him. When he's mixing his pitches and kind of going back and forth, he was locating his fastball in and out. It's a tough lineup to go through, but I thought he did an outstanding job.
It's John Schneider talking about his starting pitcher tonight, Chris Bassitt. Certainly Chris Bassitt going toe-to-toe with Brian Baio in a 3-0 Blue Jays loss. Tyler O'Neill getting the final two runs for the Red Sox with the home run off of Brandon Little as Alex Cora's lineup construction kind of came through tonight. You know, John Schneider was in a situation where I didn't have an issue with him not going to a righty there because he's got a bunch of lefties coming up. I think, you know, you want to find out some things about guys. Right? And you especially want to find out some things about guys in the bullpen. No, I'm not saying you get rid of a guy because he gave up a home run, but you're going to be pitching in the American League East. You're going to be running into Tyler O'Neill down 1-0 in the eighth inning in some games. You know, you're going to have to come through in that.
Well, I said this, you know, sometimes you got to learn the hard way, and the hard way is it better sank and not too
and
sank.
When it
sinks and it's 95, you're going to get him out.
Yep.
When it don't, even though it's on the black and it runs a little bit, running's on the barrel. And when you run it on the barrel of a dude, it looks like he's doing freaking, you know, curls at the plate. The ball, you're not getting it back. So, yeah, I think sometimes you just got to learn the hard way. And That's exactly what happened. Yeah, the four out of the five batters in the eighth inning were left-handed. So you understood why John was running him back out there. But against the right, you got to make a better pitch. You don't make a good pitch against a big league hitter hitting in the middle of the order. You pay for it in that little short porch and left. So make better
pitches. There's no such thing. There's no such thing as loogies anymore, left-handed one-out guys. There just isn't. You got to be able to get your way. You got to be able to navigate your way through a right-handed hitter or two. And
It's the pocket, right? Every once in a while you're going to run into one. It's the two lefties and a righty. And the righty, you better get the sinker down.
Yep. Kevin and Barry, you're on Blue Jays Talk. What's up, Kevin?
How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing okay, Kevin.
That's good. I just wanted to get into a little bit of the good old Jays khakis, as Kevin likes to call them. The position players that they have right now just aren't good enough. We have like probably half of the Buffalo Bison prospects in our lineup, and we're supposed to be, I guess, okay with that, that some of them are going to play next year on our team. I think if we're planning on doing that, we're going to fail. We have a pitching staff right now that's decent enough for us to probably be a playoff team. Our position players aren't good enough. We need some, as Kevin calls, bangers. We need a couple bangers at least in order to, you know, make hay and try for a playoff spot next year, because we are not good enough. We have Buffalo Bisons on our team, and everybody's supposed to be excited because, you know, maybe they get a couple hits every once in a while, but against solid pitching that you're going to get in the American East, you know, they're going to struggle. So, you know, they said they were going after Ohtani last year. They said that, but what did they spend? They spent on three guys that were 100 years old, and that they're gone now. They're Band-Aids. So what are they actually going to do next year to make this team competitive?
I appreciate the call, Kevin. We'll say this. We've always said this about the Ohtani thing. The decision to pursue Shohei Ohtani was a business decision as much as it was a baseball decision. That money existed for no one else. You weren't going to take whatever $700 million that you were thinking of giving Shohei Ohtani, or that you dangled in front of Shohei Ohtani, and then split it up among seven players or five players or six players. You wanted to sign Shohei Ohtani because he was going to make money for you. He was going to bring in merchandise, sorry, not merchandise, because that's shared among all teams. He was going to bring in corporate sponsorships alone enough money that you would probably cover off his salary. So Shohei Ohtani was a business decision from the start. That way above Mark Shapiro's pay grade in that case, that was very much a Rogers board decision to pursue Shohei Ohtani. Going after Shohei Ohtani was like buying a TV station or something like that. I mean, that's the level that decision, the importance attached to that particular decision. Juan Soto's out there this year. I think the Jays will probably make a call on him. Juan Soto is still going to cost you, probably between $500 to $600 million. I don't think you can make a business case, to be honest. You can't make the same business case for Juan Soto you could make for Shohei Ohtani. But Kevin, as Kevin said, people generally feel good about what they're seeing right now, because for most of this year, this team was a hard watch. Nobody was having any fun. They weren't hitting home runs. I mean, we know what this team was about. At least now there's a sense of energy around the team. At least now you're starting to see some home runs. But Kevin's absolutely right. That'll work in September. Yep. But next April, we can't be looking at a team that's 10 games under 500 going, yeah, but they're having fun, and they're frisky, and they're running all over the place. So Kevin's right about that. I mean, what I'm looking at this year, I'm trying to figure out which of these guys are going to be in my bench next year, and maybe which one of this group of guys is going to be a starter for me, beyond Springer and Varsho and Vladdy and Bo. That's where I am.
Yeah, I think to Kevin's point, though, he feels a lot like a lot of fans feel of the Blue Jays, that the money that they did spend, they weren't very good at giving it to the right person. Like, that's the thing, right? You know, you need to get creative. You need to do a better job of that. And on the offensive side, now the pitching side, yeah, they're real good and quick about if they mess it up, they're going to get rid of that person to get somebody else in here. For whatever reason, on the offensive side, it just hasn't been that way. So,
although they didn't do that this year with pitching either. They really, you know,
they punted on the bullpen.
Yes,
for sure.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, they punted.
Yeah. They punted on the bullpen. Bad year to do it because ain't going to be any 100-win teams. There might be a 195-win team. Like, this would have been a good year to try to tread water if you were the Blue Jays. This would have been a good year to make early moves and try to tread water. And I guess maybe that's the thing you look ahead to next year, right? I don't know. Is this the new reality? You know, I was looking at the teams in the American League, and I'm asking myself, okay, which of the teams in the American League this year are going to be worse next year? Realistically, there aren't a lot of teams that are going to fall off the face of the earth next year, Kevin, which makes me think that it may be another year where 92 win, you know what I mean? 90, you may have another year where nobody's going to win 100 games. You may have another year where 95 wins can win a division for you. So maybe that plays into the Blue Jays' hands, right? Maybe that plays into the Blue Jays' hands, because there's so much balance, there's so many good teams that you may not have that big separation. Because I look at all these teams. You know, Cleveland, look, there's going to be some regression. Cleveland might regress. Kansas City might regress. The Kansas City could be better. Minnesota is always Minnesota. Boston, I think, could be better. New York, the same, maybe better. Baltimore could be a little better. But Houston, maybe the same. Like, I don't think there's going to be a big shakeup in the American League next year. So if that's the case, maybe it's easier to put a winning team together. Maybe I'm just being overly optimistic.
No, I think you said it exactly the way it was supposed to be said. The American League's just like the National League's top heavy. Like, you got a couple of behemoth teams, and then there's everybody else, and the Jays are lumped in with everybody else. And, you know, it's to your point, I don't think if you're fighting for a wild card spot, can they go and win the American League East next year? Probably not. But they should be in the hunt. Like, if you
Absolutely.
Do enough to score more runs and get a better bullpen, you should have a chance of making a wild card spot.
3-0, the Blue Jays have lost to the Boston Red Sox. They will wrap up the series tomorrow at Fenway Park. We'll be along with Blue Jays talk again following that game. And as always, from 4 to 6 Eastern on Sportsnet 590, the Fan at Sportsnet, Blair and Barker. So thank you for listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Gander, Newfoundland, and Port Hawkesbury, Nova Scotia. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection.